Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. My name is Beth Shank, a registered nurse from Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Shanda Demarest, assistant clinical professor at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, and also a clinical nurse in an acute care setting in a cardiovascular unit. Hello, Shanda.
Morning, Beth. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Hey, well, tell us a bit about yourself. How did you get started in nursing first, and you can move right into how you got involved in environmental health nursing.
Sure, you got it. Well, I kind of fell into nursing by accident. When I was growing up in La Crescent, Minnesota, which is kind of a small town in rural southeastern Minnesota, I was a dishwasher at an American Legion. And soon I climbed the ranks from dishwasher to buffet girl to full-time waitress. And it turns out that I really liked waitressing. I liked working with the veteran population. I loved chatting with the folks there who came in as regulars. And I thought, I guess I'm kind of good at this. I also like science. Maybe I could go into healthcare. Like, that was literally the connection I made. And I ended up applying for nursing school, got right in, and it was almost like that was my destiny per se. But as I was growing up in La Crescent, I come from a family of, I like to call them foragers. Most of the men in my family forage for different things in the forest and the swamps and the bluff sides for basically to supplement their income. They forage for mushrooms and ginseng and trap muskrats and kind of living up in that lifestyle I had a lot of interface with nature. So I grew up out in the woods. And when I moved to Minneapolis to start nursing school, I was missing that nature piece. I wasn't, you know, if I was getting outside, it was in this concrete jungle. And we have a lot of nice parks in Minneapolis, but it just didn't feel the same. The environment was not as much of a part of my life as I became a young adult as it was in my childhood. And so while I was going to nursing school, I decided maybe I should check out this thing called the College of Food and Agricultural Sciences. There's a really cool program about horticulture. And my advisor recommended that I, you know, stay far away from that, focus on nursing. But I defied him and signed up for a horticultural program at the same time as I was in nursing school. And that's where I really started learning about the interconnectedness between what we're doing on this planet as humans and sort of what that response is on the environment and to the environment. And so as I was learning academically about how to become a nurse in different settings, I was fortunate to be able to pull that more holistic horticultural piece and bring in the plants and play with dirt and bring up that nature piece that was really important to me as a young person. So that was the path of ultimately being, you know, getting to the point of, I need to connect this environmentalism piece with my nursing practice. But it still took me a few years to figure out how.
So do tell, what happened next?
Well, when I was a senior in my bachelor's program of nursing. I love telling this story. And a woman came in to do a guest lecture in one of our leadership courses. And this woman's name was Dr. Teddy Potter. And she was the first nurse I ever heard talk about climate change. And all of a sudden, you know, maybe I was snoozing or doodling or something, and she said climate change, and it's like I snapped awake and I knew, oh my gosh, I need to talk to this person. I want to learn how she's doing this, because it seemed immediately like that was how I could connect nursing to the environment. And she happened to be the director of a doctoral program at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing called Health Innovation and Leadership. I can't say enough about this program, but we had a cup of tea. I always say one cup of tea in Teddy's office and your life might change. I don't know what she does to the tea, but I talked with her about my story, kind of like I shared here, and said, I'm not seeing the connection between our world and healthcare. At least that's not how it's being taught in the nursing program that I went through, how do I connect these? It seems like you've made a little bit of the connection in your own world. And ultimately, she encouraged me to enroll in her program, and I spent 3 years learning with her and other incredible faculty who were really focused on systems thinking, design thinking, the holism of health, far beyond just what we think of traditional healthcare. And I was able to focus entirely on yes, climate change and the human health impacts, but also our impacts as practitioners on our basically on our natural environment. So how what we are doing is changing the world around us, largely in a negative way, and how that's impacting our patients. And so she really employed me with the tools in her program to think about healthcare really in the broader context of environmentalism. And and that's been the foundation for all of the people that I've gotten to meet and the things that I've gotten to do in this area ever since.
That's terrific. So your graduate work addressed climate change, and then you've been now teaching and also working as a practicing nurse, and working on some other things. What are you focusing on right now?
Sure. Well, even as you brought up that I'm still practicing as a cardiac nurse, that just triggered the thought that I did want to mention. Finally, once I got into the practicing world, my suspicions of healthcare not being particularly sustainable were confirmed, and we just use so many resources to take care of a patient. I think it was actually at the Annie Summit about a month ago, or just a couple weeks ago now, where somebody said, the amount of waste that we create as a human on this planet each day is about 5 or 6 pounds. To take care of a hospital patient, it's 29 pounds. And so I saw that. That was confirmed for me, and that really fueled my decision to continue in this area. So as you mentioned, my graduate work was in the space of climate change and sustainability in healthcare. You mentioned that I'm teaching, and actually I did get an assistant professor role at the same school of nursing that I did both of my degrees in. But they've liked me enough to keep me around, and so I'm primarily teaching in medical surgical nursing and some relationship based healthcare courses at the U of M right now, and perhaps as other educators who are in this space do, I try to infuse every lecture, every presentation, every clinical with some type of, some type of little nugget about climate change and environmentalism. And so I feel like, well, this is my hope at least, that my students that I work with, hopefully they don't get so sick of hearing, hearing these pieces of sustainability and climate change. It hopefully I get to be the spark or, some sort of nudge for them to think about their practice in this way. In addition, I have a little bit of time as a faculty member to focus on my own scholarship. And so back, several months ago, I reached out to Healthcare Without Harm and Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And I said, hey, I've got this free time. I'm really, really emphatic about re-engaging nurses, or maybe engaging nurses for the first time in this conversation about climate change. Why aren't we bringing nurses up to speed with climate change? And why does it seem like nurses don't care or aren't doing anything about it? What the heck can we do? And so for the last several months, I've been partnering really closely with those two organizations to basically dream up this program called the Nurses Climate Challenge. And as we were trying to think about, is there a specific action? Is there something tangible that we can encourage nurses to do in whatever their setting is that will actually decrease the nursing impact on climate change, or ultimately decrease the carbon footprint? We ultimately struggled with the fact that not all nurses know about climate change in the first place. If they know about climate change, it's likely that they don't know about the human health impacts of climate change. So what would compel them to do anything in their setting to actually reduce climate change in the first place? And so we circled around, but finally came to the conclusion that we really need to do an educational campaign about what the heck is climate change, why it's impacting human health, and how nurses have a role in that. So basically at the Annie Summit a couple weeks ago, and at the CleanMed Conference, both of which were held in San Diego, we launched this Nurses Climate Challenge. So we did a call out, and we're trying to get nurse climate champions. And the idea here is that these champions will reach out to their peers, so nurses, but other health professionals as well, and do peer education on everything we're talking about, climate and health. And we've comprised a pretty robust toolkit that's housed online at nursesclimatechallenge.org. And this toolkit is more than just educational resources. It is a beginning to end comprehensive kit that prepares these nurse climate champions to start at the very beginning, to initially have these conversations with their leaders in their setting of, look, the World Health Organization, the Lancet, the CDC, the American Public Health Association, etc. They're all telling us that climate change is impacting human health in a really big way. It's our biggest public health threat. I'm not seeing this in my practice or academic or public health setting. Why aren't we seeing this? I would like to be part of educating my peers about it so that we can start to have the conversation about climate change and health and start to empower these other health professionals to activate on it. So we start with engaging leadership. Other pieces of the toolkit are tips and strategies for having the hard conversation about climate change with people when it's such a right now politically infused contentious topic. We have two PowerPoints that are really short, like 8 and 13 slides that these champions can give to an audience, maybe on a in a staff meeting or grand rounds or even in their academic classrooms, that walk their audience members through, okay, what are the goals of this Nurses Climate Challenge? And what is climate change? What human health impacts come from it? What are some things we can do about it? And then, heck yeah, join us, get engaged, take action. And we also have some a pretty robust list of items that health professionals can do individually and in teams, both in their work or practice settings and at home, to decrease their own carbon footprint and be more environmentally sustainable. So ultimately, we're hoping that these nurses, once they launch an educational session in whatever their setting is, they pop back on the website, tell us how many people they've educated, and that the website is pretty nifty, actually. I have a huge shout out to the media and communications team at Healthcare Without Harm. These folks created a live website that each time somebody signs up to be a champion, their little bubble shows up on the map. And so far, we actually, I didn't check yet this morning, but last night we had 55 nurse climate champions sign up in the last 2 weeks. And actually, originally, we had aimed to have this only in the US, but we already have four countries represented. We have people in Iceland and Chile and I believe Turkey. And so, yeah, I mean, you can probably hear the excitement in my voice. I can't believe how much this has taken off already. And as these champions are coming back in and reporting in a really easy metric, how many people they educate, there's a ticker that indicates how many have been educated now across the world, apparently, using this toolkit. And our lofty, maybe it's not so lofty, goal is to reach 5,000 health professionals with this Nurses Climate Challenge. So that's the main one right now.
So Shanda, let me back up a bit to just as the call out to anyone who's listening who may want to join. I think you said nursesclimatechallenge.org, and they just describe what they would need to do to get started, if you would.
Oh, great, great. So there is a link right on the homepage that where you can register to become a nurse climate champion, just a couple pieces of demographic information. that on the back end we're able to approve you for free to have access to all of these resources, and all the resources are housed right online. So it's super simple. Just hop onto the website and register. So Beth, as you know, we've been working really hard over the last few months with also Kara Cook from Annie on the CHANT tool, or the CHANT survey, so the Climate Health and Nurses tool. And this survey is all about what nurses know about climate change, how they are emotionally connected, or basically whether they care about climate change in their practice setting and in their own personal setting, and if they're motivated to take action, and what they do in their own lives to you know, take these climate friendly behaviors. And so that survey launched at the same time as the Nurses Climate Challenge during the Annie Summit and during Clean Med. And we're doing the first iteration now to try to get about 350, 400 responses so that we can go back, refine the tool, test it for reliability and validity. And, you know, this has gone through the IRB. It's a very legitimate survey that we are hoping that we're getting a snapshot of the national national situation with how nurses are aware of climate change and what they're doing about it. So this is going to be the bedrock of hopefully some pretty significant future work as well.
Great. Thank you for explaining that. And you also had a big conference recently at the University of Minnesota.
Ah, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. So one group that I'm part of in Minnesota is called Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. And this is a pretty innovative interdisciplinary group. It's not just nurses. We've got physicians, bioethicists, public health professionals, vet med. We have all sorts of health professionals working together, all with the sole mission of educating our own, basically. So educating health professionals and the public about climate change. And we had a conference a few weeks ago titled Code Blue for Patient Earth, Responding to the Urgent Threat of Climate Change to One Health. And this conference basically was aimed at health professionals, health students, policymakers, members of the public, all about this topic of One Health, which is really the intersection of environmental health, human health, and animal health, which we know is all intricately intertwined, right? And basically how climate change is impacting that. And we also had a huge component of the conference of, you know, where we were trying to inspire others to take action and to make their own personal commitments about how to decrease their carbon footprint and how to spread this word about kind of the dangerous situation we're in terms of climate change and the clients, whether they're people or animals that we care for. Also at that conference, we got to share about some of the curriculum work we're doing at the University of Minnesota. And that's also interdisciplinarily fueled. We're focusing on all of the, you know, main health impacts of climate change that the CDC has identified. And our group has health professionals from 9 different schools at the U of M. And we're working to collate a relatively basic, simple curriculum that we're going to infuse into all of our health programs at the U of M in our academic health center. And ultimately, we are being really mindful to include, to include information that is applicable to health no matter what the profession is, because we know that climate change it's really only going to be addressed, it's really only going to be solved with this interdisciplinary lens. And at the U of M, we try really hard to hold that, you know, to hold that interprofessional torch, because working in this, in a silo, that's never going to help us achieve our goals.
That's really interesting and important. Did you have, or did people immediately come to the table, the different disciplines, or did you have to work to convince anyone? How did that team building go?
Yeah, thanks. Great question. Actually, a lot of this work stemmed from a survey that a student group, Health Students for a Healthy Climate, launched a few years ago. And it's kind of like the chant tool, actually. This is when I was a graduate student and part of that student group, and we asked our interdisciplinary health students, which are, as I mentioned before, nursing, medicine, pharmacy, dentistry, vet med, and public health at the U of M. We asked these students, are you seeing climate change curriculum? Are you seeing content about how your clients are impacted by climate? If you are getting this content, what setting is it in? Do you want to hear more about it? Do you believe that it's an issue? And ultimately, we got responses from all of these students. Every single discipline was represented. We had a few hundred responses. And these students told us, no, we're not seeing climate change education in our curriculum. Yes, we do believe it's impacting our patients and our animals. Yes, we do want to see it. Here are a few ways we think that we could see it. This is important. And ultimately, as part of that student group, I was with a couple other people. I was able to take that to a meeting of our assistant deans, and we said, look, the consumers are saying that they want to see curriculum about climate change. Is this a legitimate argument? Can we bring it in? And believe it or not, they said, we're going to stand behind this. Let's get the curriculum in. Let's collate a team. And so that's the work that's been happening over the last year.
That's just terrific. Are you measuring outcomes? Is someone measuring it somehow?
Yes, we are. This is a several phase project. And so after each phase, we're measuring, student change in understanding about climate change. We're measuring how much they enjoyed receiving the content. And it's still iterative right now. We're still in phase two of phase three, but, absolutely. We really believe that the metrics piece is valuable so that we can, we can make the argument for continuing to develop this content.
Cool. That's great. Nice job, Shanda, of really tying a lot of things together and being able to bring them to life. You've been very effective and I would say efficient, So I have a question for you. It's a more personal question just about I know personally that a lot of times this work is really swimming upstream and there's lots of no's and there's lots of closed doors and lots of barriers, but you chip away and you make some progress. And I'm just interested in how would you describe, first of all, how you maintain your energy, what continues to give you hope and motivation? What do you think it is at root that drives your energy and commitment in this area? And I know about, some is from your background, but that sort of burning flame is what I'm interested in. What is that for you?
I love that. Even my students who hear me lecture about like oncology and the integumentary system, they think that is the most important thing in my whole life when I'm talking about it. I really try to bring enthusiasm and excitement for everything that I do. And that's not to say it's not genuine. I think personally, I really just love the feeling, the intrinsic feeling of like being excited and smiling and laughing all feels good to me. And so when I take that personality and kind of approach whatever my challenge is with that, it makes it easier, it makes it more fun, it makes it more exciting. And interestingly, I've found that it's more engaging for other people. And I think that, again, regardless of the topic, it's really painful to listen to somebody who's not engaging, who's not really into what they're talking about. And when it comes to climate change and environmentalism, we don't have space for boring. Like, we don't have space for people to not try to draw in their audience. Because if we write people off just with our approach, then we've missed the point entirely. And so when I get to talk about this stuff, I get butterflies thinking about it. Even if I'm sitting at home, talking with you about this podcast, it's just intrinsic. And I know that the more, to a certain extent, to the more emphatic and genuinely excited I am about the content, the more it's going to engage other people. And that's exactly what we need. And with that said, I mean, I've got a baby face. I'm not very old, and so I know that that there's a certain risk with being really high energy, especially when you're youthful. That, you know, there's the risk that people will write you off or think, oh, this person's just flying all over the place. But as long as we're able to, you know, articulate what our topic is and be sharp with our content, then we have the, you know, we have the substance behind the excitement. And so far that's really helped me create great relationships and create relationships with allies that I think maybe if I didn't approach it with as much energy, there wouldn't be as much attention on it. And so so far so good. I know that there are some people who don't love the energy, but we all have something to contribute.
You bet. And I, you know, just having known you for a few years and watched you, I think you're very effective with your energy. It's ebullient and engaging. And I totally agree with you that boring loses people. And also, I also realize that this area is sometimes pushes people's buttons. And so I think, you know, as you say, to have a smile and have a bit of a light heart about it is also effective. And it sounds like you don't have to really conjure up the energy. You just have this energy at this point because you see this problem. And I want you to, I'm not paraphrasing for you. I'm just seeing if this is what I'm hearing. You see this problem, and it's climate change, yes, but it's also really broader than that in terms of the way that humans impact our environment overall. And you see its relationship to health. You come from this background of having a strong connection to the natural world, and you also are in healthcare, which you value. And so the product of that is, whoa, what can I do about this? Is that kind of where you get your energy?
It is. It is. And I also drink a lot of coffee. And I also just want to tack on to there that it starts with listening. And I think when we have these energetic conversations about, heck yeah, what do we do about it? There's a really important space there that I before I get to that point, I like to spend time with the people that I'm trying to convince or the people that I'm trying to energize and listen about what, you know, what their story is, what is their connection, because typically that's going to help people get more engaged as well as when they feel that they have something to contribute, and then we can together latch on to that energy and get psyched up. Because it's important to include people to, you know, to the extent that they feel that this is their challenge, this is their fight as well. And then share the energy.
Yeah, that's great. Well, nice job. And I've already taken about all of our time with you. Is there something else that you'd like to wrap up with that we didn't talk about yet today? Or anything you want to, any message you'd like to give the world or nurses or anyone?
Well, I think what I would love to say is this space in environmentalism and nursing or environmentalism and health, it's not very big. It's a small world. And I mean, when I was a young grad student, I was a young professional, I mean, I'm shocked, seriously, every single week by the people that I get to work with, almost every single day. I never thought that these relationships, even that I would have with you and Katie and Kara and Annie, and I mean, I've gotten to meet the legends of Annie and Charlotte Brody and Barb Sattler and Susan Wilburn. It's like, holy smokes, I have no business even intersecting with these people. But it's a small enough world that if, you know, if all of us nurses have something to contribute. And if you have a passion in this area, like, don't be shy. You know, reach out to Annie, check out the website. Send emails to these folks because it truly, it's yes, we're all inundated with work, but at the same time, there are not enough people doing, you know, doing the work with us. And so just just be open to interacting with people that might seem way outside of your league, because you never know, just by sending some cold emails or making some old-fashioned cold calls. Building those relationships is totally possible, and it's really incredible when you're able to partner with people who have paved the way before you. You know, like you, Beth, you were the first person out of everyone that I met, and I can't believe the stuff we've gotten to do together. So give it a chance, take a try, and it's just fascinating and so energizing when you find your people in this area. So I would really encourage folks to do that.
That's great. Totally second that. And you all heard it from Shanda. Don't be shy about just reaching out and contacting people, because when you have a passion, passion seems to find the passion in others, I would say. Well, Shanda, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you all who are listening to hearing this episode of the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. Please check us out at the ANI website, which is envirn.org, envirn.org. And also, if you have a chance, please leave a review of this podcast on wherever you get your podcasts, because that helps us move up in visibility. And we want more nurses to hear this. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you next time.